Memory Static is a listener-supported podcast. Your contributions really make a difference in helping us keep the show going. So please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Memory Static, the podcast that finds movies you loved and watched when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. Oh, also stay tuned at the end of the episode because we have an original song at the end of every episode written by me, Bailey Moore, and my brother, Cullen Moore. And this episode has been a long time coming because the guest tonight is way overdue to choose the movie. I am, of course, talking about my good friend and producer and editor of this podcast, Eric Dumig.
Hello. How's it going, everybody?
Well, I can certainly speak for everyone and say that it's awesome. will you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us what you've been working on?
Sure. So I'm Eric. I produce and edit this podcast. I do a few other things. My main thing that I do is sound for movies, which is a lot of fun. I work on movie sets and record the actors while the camera's rolling.
That's how he makes this sound so good.
Yeah, that's how I make it sound so good. And I really like messing around with sound and stuff. So that's been really fun to get into podcasting with you, Bailey. I also produce an educational television show on YouTube about Chinese tea called Gong Fu Tea Cha. The channel is called Tea House Ghost, so you can check it out there.
Yes, thank you. Everybody should.
It's a fun show to make.
what movie are we going to be watching?
So we're going to be watching the movie Josie and the Pussycats from 2001.
Ding, ding, ding. and it's directed by Deborah Kaplan and Harry Elfont, and starring lots of people.
Yeah, quite a few names in this cast list, you know, and some of them, not all of them, but some of them kind of, I guess, early on in their career, I guess like kind of earlier on in me knowing who they were. Let's put it that way. That's more accurate. Like Rosario Dawson. I think it was the first time I'd ever seen Rosario Dawson in a movie.
I think probably the same for me.
If not the first, then the second movie, seeing Tara Reid in a movie. I think right around that time, Rachel Lee Cook was in a bunch of movies. Like I remember seeing her in this and then immediately in Antitrust.
Yeah, and she was in
with
She's
Ryan
All
Philippe.
That right before
oh,
that.
Oh, right. She's All That. Oh, my God. the late 90s, early 2000s. What an amazing time.
Well, I mean, and it's funny that you bring that up, that these people were, you know, just big at the time.
Uh-huh. Alan Cumming, for that matter, too. I mean, he was in X-Men 2, like, right after this.
That's
he was Nightcrawler.
Right.
And Floop in Spy Kids. Like, he was all over the TV that I was watching.
Thank you. I could not figure out what it was that I knew him from, but that's because he was covered in blue makeup.
That's right. Yes. And he's disappearing a bunch.
Disappearing a bunch. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so, like, it also, like, other big stars in it are Parker Posey.
Love her.
And Missy Pyle.
Who's Missy Pyle?
Missy Pyle does a lot of character actors.
Okay. Who is she in this movie?
She is Alexandra. She doesn't really have much of a point.
Okay.
but she even makes a comment in the movie. Like, they're like, why are you here? She's like, because I was in the comic book.
Oh, cool.
She basically is just like a rival of Josie. Even though
cool.
Josie barely even registers that she's there.
Right.
But Missy Pyle, she was in a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie. She was the mother in the white jumpsuit.
The new one? Like,
yeah,
with
the new
Johnny
one.
Depp?
The new one, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see it.
She was also in Dodgeball. She's the one
oh,
with
cool.
the monobrow.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, she's
okay,
great.
Cool.
She's great.
Nice.
And then there's like a cameo with Eugene Levy.
Oh, right. Oh, man.
And he
forgot
just plays
about
himself,
that.
Actor.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
So,
just Eugene Levy, the guy.
Yeah. And all of these people, like, And because there's so much product placement in the movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of product placement.
Yeah,
in the movie.
It kind of serves as a time capsule of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
In fact, one of the most, probably the most quotable line for me, at least, like the one that I keep coming back to as a quote that I bring up all the time in conversations for like the stupidest reasons, but for whatever reason, this line has stuck with me, is very time capsule about like product placement, because it's that one about drinking a six pack of Zima, and the guy's like, "Dude, you don't drink," and he's like, "I'm gonna start."
I don't even know what Zima is.
It's like proto Smirnoff Ice. It's like before Smirnoff Ice was a thing. It's some kind of like, you know, I don't know exactly, because I was obviously not drinking at 10 years old or 11 years old, however old I was when Zima was around. But I think it's like something like that, like some kind of sugary alcohol drink.
Okay. Like a wine cooler or something?
Something. Or there's one of those kind of like Mike's Hard Lemonade type things.
Okay.
I may be totally wrong. Maybe it's malt liquor. I don't know. I have no idea what Zima is, but I think it's that.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a few things that they're selling in that movie that it's like, wait, is that even around anymore? But like, so how old were you when you saw this?
I was 11. I guess I would have been 10, because it came out in 2001 and I would have turned 11 at the very end of 2001.
So you
I'm
were
a December
in fourth
kid.
Or fifth grade?
Yes, I would have been in fifth grade at that time.
Did you see it in the movie theater?
I did. I think I did. Yes.
So what are your memories surrounding this movie?
So most of my memories, I mean, a lot of my memories about it are about pop music and pop punk music, because that was super my shit back then. Like, just as much as anything could be my shit, that was my shit. It was like just bands and being in bands and like playing cool punk rock music. Like, that's what I wanted to do at that time. And I ended up doing pretty much all through high school, was like playing in bands and being in like those, you know, just like cool threesome bands or whatever. But also just pop music. Like, I was kind of in that in-between space between being like a cool, like wannabe cool high schooler and being like really into NSYNC and Britney Spears and Mandy Moore and Destiny's Child and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, all just like late 90s pop music, which, you know, I guess like in that tween time was like, I guess, starting to take on like a twinge of maybe I'm too old for this. But like, it never really got there for me, I don't think. Like, I just kind of kept liking all of that stuff into high school, even as I started adding like, you know, emo pop punk stuff that I started getting into in high school. And I think Josie and the Pussycats as a band, especially the way they're portrayed in this movie and the kind of music that they play in this movie, is kind of right in between those two things. Like, mm-hmm. It's kind of like that Blink 182 Green Day kind of pop punk music, but with a little bit more of a poppy edge. So it just kind of fell right in that zone of like, you know, music being really cool. I remember also at that time, around that time, 2001 was like the very beginning of like my time downloading music. So music was like just a huge thing. Like, it was all around me all the time, and not at home, because I didn't have a good enough computer, nor did I have the allowance from my parents.
So where did you do
that? I had to go to my cousin's house, because he had a CD burner. I actually used to exploit my cousin all the time, because he had like a really big house with a really cool basement, and he came from a family that like let him have every video game console, you know, like he got the Nintendo and the Sega and the PlayStation.
So that was the place to hang out.
Oh yeah. So I would like go over to his house for an afternoon and then convince him to let us do like a sleepover, and like he would just like want to go to bed at 9 or whatever. And I'm like, but like, please tell my mom you really want me to sleep over so that I can stay up all night in your basement and like play your Grand Theft Auto 3 and download stuff on LimeWire and like burn 5 CDs. Please. Please do that for me, Mike.
But, and he let you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It worked most of the time. Well, I mean, it was also like I was ganging up on him because there were two of me. I'm a twin.
Oh, right.
So, like, you know, it was me and Crow both saying this at the same time, like, please, Mike, please let us play your video games all night and like stay in your basement and drink your Pepsi and Mountain Dew.
Just kind of imagining the two of you backing your cousin into a wall.
Oh, like, nonstop.
Just like, okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, a lot of the time I think he was pretty down with it, but like some of the time I think definitely we just like, you know, pressured him into doing it, even though he just wanted to go to bed.
So, is that why you chose this movie to share with everyone?
I think I chose, yeah, for that reason. And just like, you know, a good excuse to, talk about music from this time period. I think it's also, you know, I'm excited to talk with the guests, about this movie because, for one thing, you know, the Archie comics, have been making a comeback with the shows Riverdale and Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Very true.
I don't watch either of those shows, but I have a friend who writes for Riverdale, and I know a fair few of my friends have been really keeping up with the show. So I'm interested to hear like what they think about it, if they've seen Josie and the Pussycats on the new show, because I know they've been in the new show to some degree. I know they've had episodes with Josie and the Pussycats, but I haven't seen them. So I'm just interested to see, you know, people's reactions to it, like 2001 versus 2019, 2018.
Yeah.
Josie and the Pussycats, and see like what kind of music are they playing right now? Like I haven't seen the shows. So like I what kind of music are they playing? Are they still playing pop punk, or are they playing something else? You know,
I have watched the first season of Riverdale, but I can't remember. I remember more about the characters than I do about the movie or the music.
Yeah.
But maybe someone that'll be here tonight will be able to illuminate.
Yeah, maybe. I'm hoping so. But, you know, I think that was another reason for picking it, just, you know, since it's coming back and it seems like a fitting time to revisit. I have a few stories around, you know, this movie and some characters in it too, which I thought would be fun to share. So,
well, give us one.
Okay, so one story around this was that, you know, one of the big characters that stood out to me was Rosario Dawson. And I thought she was so cool in this movie.
She's so cool.
And I remember like just being like, okay, Josie's cool, but Rosario Dawson is a badass. And then like a few years later in high school, I actually got to meet her because so Quentin Tarantino was filming Death Proof.
That's right. And she's in that. I couldn't, it's been a while since I saw that movie, so I couldn't remember if she's in the first half or the second half.
She's in the second
half. Okay, that's what I was hoping.
Yeah, she's like with the team of stunt driver.
Yes, the Australian
actors.
Woman.
Yes.
So it's such a cool movie.
She gets left behind, I think, with the cheerleader actress when the two stunt women go off and do the whole driving bit. But she's in the movie. And so while I was in high school, they were filming at this taqueria, like very, very close to my high school, which is just outside of Austin. And some of my movie buff friends were going and checking out the trying to see what was going on. They were watching like 200 yards away, sitting on a dumpster through a chain link fence, like trying to get any glimpse of like what was happening on this film set. And on the fourth day, I finally was like, all right, cool. I'll come check it out with you guys. And, I was there like 5 minutes and Quentin Tarantino just walks up to the chain link fence and is like, hey guys, you want to come on set? And we're like, yes, we would.
Cool.
And he just like brought us like 20 feet from, you know, where he was filming and told all the PAs like get us water if they asked for it. And so we're just sitting there and, you know, after a few takes of whatever shot they were filming, I'm pretty sure it didn't end up in the movie. Rosario Dawson comes up and says hi to all. She's like, hi guys.
Wow.
And we're like, hi. She's like, are you guys in high school? And we all like hang our heads and we're like, yeah. Damn it. Yes, we are. Yeah. And so that was like pretty much the extent of our meeting. I mean, we said like maybe two other things, but I ended up staying there for like the rest of that evening and skipping most of the, I think it was the night of my homecoming football game my senior year. And I was like, fuck that. I'm not going to the football game. I'm going to stay on this Quentin Tarantino movie set.
Totally worth staying there.
Yeah.
I didn't even go to my my senior homecoming, mm-hmm. I think I went to a movie with a friend instead. We saw Monsters, Inc.
Oh, nice. But yeah, I think I did mention while on the set that, like, you know, to Rosario Dawson, I was like, man, and you were so great in Josie and the Pussycats. And she was like, oh, that was such a fun movie to make. I was like, that's dope.
That's cool. So cool.
It does seem like a fun movie to make.
That is so cool.
I wonder if she got to meet Dujour.
Well, I want to come back to your other stories, but one of the other questions that I had written down was if you had any celebrity crushes on anybody in this movie. Oh, it's full of beautiful people.
It is full of beautiful people. I mean, definitely Rosario Dawson, probably to some degree, Rachel Lee Cook, although I thought she was even like cooler in Antitrust because she's like a cool like hacker girl, you know?
She has beautiful eyes.
She really does. Very striking, like cat eyes.
Almost like anime eyes. Yeah, they're so big.
They're crazy looking. And then, you know, I don't know if I would call it a crush necessarily in this movie, but Alan Cumming is like just such a charming guy.
Yeah.
And I really like him in pretty much everything he's in. And just was very drawn to him from the first time I saw him on screen and continuing to this day, like, whenever I see him in something, I'm always like, yeah, Alan Cumming's in this. It's great. I don't know what it is about him. I just always got an impression like we would be cool friends.
You know, I brought up this question now because you mentioned, you know, asked if she'd met Dujour. Mm-hmm. I probably saw this movie in the theater because I saw Seth Green is in it.
Oh yeah.
And I had a big crush on him.
Did you really?
I did.
Awesome.
And it was starting from Buffy.
I mean, Dujour's got quite a few now famous guys
That's
in it,
true.
I think. Like a few of them have like went on to have pretty big careers.
Yeah. There's Breckin Meyer is one of them.
I guess that's his name. He's the pretty boy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Donald Faison,
mm-hmm.
which I believe he's in Scrubs.
Yeah, I didn't watch that show. I don't watch a lot of TV, more movies than TV.
I also like. I hope that this is the correct name because I didn't put like their characters next to the names.
Mm-hmm.
So there is one other member of Dujour named Alexander Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. What were some of the other stories?
I think that's probably
that was
it.
The big
I
one.
Mean, that was the big one. There weren't really too many other stories of Josie and the Pussycats other than no, that's really probably the main one was the Rosario Dawson thing. And then just, you know, I think the 1-2 punch of Antitrust with Rachel Lee Cook being like pretty I think they came out pretty close to each other and also around that time if it wasn't music at that time for me, it was definitely like computer hacking. I was like super into like programming websites and being the leadest computer hacker kid. And I was really involved with like this like anarcho-punk hacker website that like taught you basic to advanced web hacking through like a gamified online website. And Crow and I used to get on their IRC channel all the time and just like, you know, chat up all their head members who that site was run by a now famous whistleblower named Jeremy Hammond. I was 13 and like calling this guy on the phone while at the mall. Like
Whoa.
I would go to the mall with Crow and our other friend Justin. And we were like a little team of hackers that were 13 years old. And we just like chatted up these folks, tried to make them think we were super cool. Justin was really good at all the like hacking stuff and like read all the forums to be able to like learn how to do all these hacks. And so we all three of our profiles like showed that we had completed every single task. And so we looked like really elite hackers, even though Crow and I never actually got very good at it. Justin got really good at it and Crow and I just really liked talking to people. So like by the time we were 14, I think we convinced these people to like let us run parts of their website. I remember we built a web like a little dummy website out of PHP and SQL, and the first thing that we built was like a login function, and we asked all these people on the website hackthissite.org to come test it out for us and make sure it was right. And like half of them gave us their passwords. And then we just like, you know, went back and logged into their hack this site things because they just checked how many of them use the exact same password that they use for hack this site. And a bunch of them did. So we're like, pwned you noobs. Like, you know, it was just a silly, silly time where we just thought we were cool hackers and got really deep into that organization. And then we moved to Texas, and right around then we kind of used that as like a reason to just like ghost the site. We're like, if we stay involved with these people, we're probably like gonna go to jail. So maybe we should stop.
Wow.
It was really silly.
Well, I mean, I have to say, well, I'm a little bit older than you, so maybe I might have known people that were into hacking if I were a little bit younger, but like, this is a very novel conversation for me. Like,
really?
I've never done.
It was just like what I was into. I mean, I remember I'd seen The Matrix
that,
around
then.
I
think that sounds like you were pretty cool and not just that you thought you were pretty cool.
I mean, let's be real. I was being a bratty young tween boy on these IRC forums. Like I was not being a cool, nice person. Like I was.
Oh, so you were trolling a little bit.
I was trolling for sure.
Okay, like, never mind. I take it back.
I was definitely being an asshole to these people and generally like promoting how dope I was while doing that by putting down other people and all the other bullshit that 12-year-old boys do.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
You know, I'm really tooting my own horn here. But yeah, like to bring this back to Rachel Lee Cook, I mean, Antitrust was such a weirdly cool movie to me at the time. Like, it's not a good movie, but, you know, I was just fascinated with that space with like big companies, computer companies. And like, that's a movie that's supposed to be about like a basically like an evil Bill Gates who like kills programmers to steal their code. Mm-hmm. And she's like kind of one of his henchmen.
Okay.
It's yeah, Tim Robbins who plays the
evil I'll have
to
check that
Bill
movie
Gates.
Out. I definitely haven't seen it. I think the only other movie I ever saw Rachel Lee Cook in was She's All That.
Yeah.
Which, like, I really liked that movie when I was young. And now, like, I realize how problematic it is. And, like, also the fact that I liked it so much says a lot about the way that young women are kind of programmed to expect to be like the way that we were wanting to be treated, you know?
Yeah. So, like falling into the Hollywood tropes that just kind of like, you know, often I guess paint women as just like people who are there to like the main character or guy in one way or another. Like,
yeah.
Like the
I mean, like, maybe this is a conversation for another time.
Potentially.
But
I mean, we could go on this for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, you know, the guests are going to arrive soon.
Yeah.
And I do have a party favor for everyone.
Oh,
but
good.
I wanted you to choose first, since this is your movie.
Okay.
And there are different ones.
Cool.
And I didn't tell you what I got.
No, you didn't.
But I bet you have an idea.
I have no clue. Oh, dear Lord. Okay, awesome. So these are, to describe what I'm looking at here for you listeners at home, this is a variety of cat ear headbands that are sequined ears in a variety of colors. The current colors that I see are gold, red, light pink, magenta, blue. Oh, do I spy a rainbow?
There is the rainbow.
That's
one.
Definitely the one I'm picking.
That's what I thought. I thought
cyan
that
and white silver and like white mica, like in like iridescent. So I'm gonna go with the rainbow ones for sure.
Okay, well I'm gonna choose the gold ones just because I feel like it matches my what I'm wearing. So
wonderful. I'm going to take these out later because
it's just making
a bunch of ASMR crinkle
noises.
We'll
let the guests open them and we'll say, you can't have those.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, are you ready to get in the slow moving time machine?
I am.
Okay. Let's do it.
All time machine systems online. Systems go.
I'm really glad my wireless gets through this, you know, like I left the recorder outside. I didn't know if it was going to be okay, but it sounds like we're still in business.
Well, it I guess it, you know, that brings up some really interesting physical questions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm gonna put on my resume for sound that, you know, I have interdimensional equipment that
time
works
equipment.
That
yeah,
works great.
Yeah, music
you know,
equipment.
It works totally fine
works
for going
all
into
over
alternate
space
dimensions.
And time.
For sure.
Wow. So you've been so it's already getting us.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so you know, you've always been in here recording every episode.
Yes, of course.
So I know I don't have to go through the whole slow moving time machine rigmarole about how it moves slightly faster than real life.
Yeah.
So we can talk about the movie while the party is watching it out there. Nor do I have to mention that your existence has been split into two separate realities, which can have unpleasant side effects like disorientation, dizziness, vomiting, and so on.
Diarrhea, etc.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, okay, exactly. Cool. And so you're old hat at this.
Yeah.
So
you didn't have to say any of that.
Yeah,
of
I don't have to say that stuff, so I'm not going to.
That's fine. That's
yeah.
Good.
We'll just move on.
We'll just skip right by that.
Yeah, but I did want to ask you like. You know, normally we make you sit on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And I know it's not comfortable because I made it and it's made out of like corrugated tin siding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you work with what you got.
Yeah, yeah. This is a low budget production still. Sponsor us.
Yeah. So what's it like to sit in one of the chairs?
You know, it's very comfy. It is extremely comfy. I want to say I'm really glad that you made them swivel chairs because I'm having a blast in this. just a total 360 blast. Just all the time, you know, just coming back around. It was just great.
Well, you know, like I built this with fun in mind.
Good. Good. It's quite the ride. And you know, windows were a good idea too. You know, you can see the interdimensional travel, you know, zooming by.
It's one-sided glass though.
Mhm.
Even though like people wouldn't really be able to perceive us, it just makes us feel a little more comfortable knowing that if they could, or if there's something else out there moving at the same speed as us, they're not going to be peeping in.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's good deal. Good design. good design choices by Bailey Moore.
Thank you. I do try to think ahead. Okay. So Josie and the Pussycats.
Yes. I'm so ready.
Okay. The character.
Mm-hmm.
Josie, a smart and charismatic redhead, was first conceived in the 1950s by cartoonist Dan DiCarlo. The character was inspired during a cruise to the Caribbean by his wife, also named Josie.
It's also my mom's name.
Really?
Mm, her name's Joanne, but she goes as Josie.
That's a really cute name.
Mm-hmm, I like it.
So Josie brought along a cat costume onto the boat, with no explanation as to what the cat costume was for. But apparently that was the inspiration for the character. But, you know, since there was no explanation, I like to imagine that they got discounted tickets for the cruise because she was a daughter of an exterminator and they hired her to be the rat catcher. But because it was the 50s, they also, and wives weren't really allowed to work, she had to wear the sexist uniform while performing her job.
Oh, man. Performing her job of rat exterminator.
I mean, isn't that the most likely scenario?
So you're painting a picture of like a reverse pool boy situation where she's having to clean up the deck of rats in a cat costume.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I
that
mean,
tracks.
Yeah, right? I mean, can you think
for
of something
50s,
more likely?
That definitely tracks.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, I think that's a very likely scenario.
And you know, like, you know, Dan DiCarlo is just like, oh, my wife is so funny.
She's so great
catching those rats.
You're
like
just
a cat.
Following those rats around.
I can make a comic strip out of this.
Oh, my gosh. You're kidding me. You have to do that.
Yeah.
Please do.
Okay, so after working on the concept for a bit, he took 6 samples of the Josie comic strip and 6 samples of another comic named Willy Lumpkin that he had co-created with Stan Lee, and he took them to a publisher. He was told that they liked the dailies he submitted, but they needed more examples. At this point, DiCarlo decided he could not commit to doing daily comic strips for both. So he concentrated on Willy Lumpkin and shelved Josie for a little over a year. When Willy Lumpkin was canceled.
Wonder why.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Don't know.
He dusted off Josie and resubmitted it. But by then, the publisher no longer had any interest in the subject. But he was determined to continue the project. So DiCarlo sent the idea to Archie Comics with the intention of moving Josie out of a daily comic strip and into her very own comic book series. And they accepted the proposal, and Josie made her very first appearance in She's Josie in 1963.
Sweet.
Yeah. Now, Archie Comics was a well-established comic book publisher at this point. Do you know anything about it?
Very little to nothing.
Okay, well, they'd gained their readers due to the, you know, whitewashed all-American high school character Archie. And Archie was based on the Andy Hardy movies starring Mickey Rooney.
Gotcha.
So those were very popular in the 30s and 40s. So they kind of had this built-in fan base that carried over from the Andy Hardy movies.
Gotcha.
You ever seen any of those?
No. Is it as thirsty teen drama as the new Archie show?
No.
No?
No.
Bummer.
It's all like, you know, gee whiz.
Gotcha.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Because I haven't seen the new show, but it sounds like they basically took the old Archie comics and put them through the ringer of like Twin Peaks. And then now it's the new Archie show, Riverdale.
It's like, gee willikers, Mr. Smith. My milk bottle's been broken and it's broken 2 weeks in a row. What are the cats going to drink?
Rats.
Bring in Josie.
Josie and the Pussycats.
So the characters of the Josie comic books and the Archie universe had regular crossover issues, but they were separate comic books. Josie, Melody, a ditzy blonde character, Alex, who's the manager, and Alexandra, Alex's twin and Josie's manipulative rival, were all characters at the inception of the series. Alan M. was introduced later, and Valerie, the third pussycat, wasn't brought in until issue 45, when the series officially changed its name to...
Josie and the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
So, are you familiar with the cartoon series at all?
I am aware that it was a thing, and I think I might have seen like one or two episodes when I was young, but I don't remember anything about them.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you about them.
Totally.
So Archie was the first to have his own Saturday morning cartoon series called The Archie Show, created by Filmation, which is another one of those studios that were notorious for exploiting limited animation techniques, like we talked about in
Word.
Episode 2.
In a few episodes, I think. Yeah, episode 2 with UPA and Gay Paris.
Yeah.
And then again, I think we talk about the limited animation in how much Don Bluth didn't like them in the NIMH episode.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You listen really well.
I've had to listen to every single episode, Bailey.
Very slowly, right?
Several times over.
Of course. You're such a good listener.
You know, I pride myself on that. I appreciate you acknowledging it.
Well, you know, you find ways of you find the opportunities to compliment your friends.
That's true. That's true. You know what's a funny thing about... This is just a digression, but you know what's the funny thing about the Archie comics? Is that for the longest time, I thought the main character of the Archie comics was Jughead, because he's always on the cover of everyone that was in like the Impulse Buy section. I don't know if they keep the Archie comics in the Impulse Buy section anymore at the grocery store, mm-hmm. but I feel like growing up, I used to see them all the time, like the little Jughead comics, and I thought it was Jughead's comic. Like, I thought Jughead was the main character, because it always seemed to have something about like the goofy shit Jughead was doing.
Yeah, I did not read too much about the Archie comics themselves. Mm-hmm. There's a very long Wikipedia page on the Archie comics, and it wasn't engaging enough for me to like really absorb.
Sure. Well, if any listeners out there really want to contact the show and give us your full spiel on the Archie universe and, you know, what your takes, give us your hot takes, you can always
you know about
reach
Jughead.
Out to us at memorystatic@gmail.com.
Yes, you can, and please do.
You sure can. Send us mail. We like it.
Filmation is where I was.
That's right.
The show was a huge success.
Awesome.
And
it's because Josie and the Pussycats are dope.
Well, they weren't on it. They weren't in it.
Oh, no.
It's just Archie.
This is just Archie's
show.
Oh, wow.
And it got great ratings on CBS, and it topped radio Billboard charts with a hit single, which I'm sure everybody knows, but I don't know if they know it's from this cartoon. Have you ever?
No. What is it?
Ba 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 ba. Oh, honey, honey.
No.
Yeah, sugar, sugar.
That's from Archie.
It's from Archie.
What? You are my candy girl.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Isn't that great?
That's so good. I had no idea. What a good piece of trivia.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep that in the back pocket forever now.
Arrival Animation Studio wanted to get in on that sweet, sweet musical cartoon action. And that rival studio was Hanna-Barbera.
That's right.
And so they started drafting their own similar Saturday morning cartoon. Their first attempt at cashing in on that sugar, sugar was not, in fact, Josie and the Pussycats.
Who was it?
It was a show called Mysteries 5.
Hmm.
Now, stop me when
is this... Is this like Fox Force 5?
No.
Okay.
No. So this is going to start to sound familiar, I think. So let me just describe what Mysteries 5 was. Mysteries 5 was supposed to be a musical group of teenagers named Jeff, Mike, Kelly, Linda, and WW, along with their large, bongo-playing, but cowardly Great Dane named Too Much.
Scooby-Doo?
Shh.
What?
You already guessed it.
What?
Well, let me keep going. But when not playing gigs, they were solving mysteries, including zombies, ghosts, monsters, and ghouls.
It is Scooby-Doo. Yes.
So the network rejected Mysteries 5 because of the scary imagery.
What?
And when they reworked it to focus more on the comedic element rather than the scary stuff, I'm pouting now, the musical factor was completely dropped.
That is a bummer. I kind of feel like Scooby-Doo, I mean, it's a great show, but mm-hmm. it could have benefited from them also being a cool rock band or whatever kind of band.
Yeah,
they
like
were.
Imagine
what
like
kind of band would they be? Maybe a reggae band? I don't know. Like what kind of band would they be?
I mean, I feel like
psych
it probably
rock.
Would have been similar to Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
Like
but what kind of music were they originally? Were they like
I would think that it would be I mean, considering that it was Hanna-Barbera, I would think it'd probably be some kind of like pop, not doo-wop. What's the like bubblegum.
Like
probably.
Bubblegum pop.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Mysteries 5 could have been like surf rock. That would have been fun.
That would have been great.
Like a surf rock
but
band.
But I imagine them like running from like, you know, Frankenstein's monster and then like stopping in the middle of it and playing their instruments. And then the monster comes too close. So they set them all down and run away.
Yeah.
That's what I imagine.
That'd be so good. Who would play what? Is Shaggy playing drums?
We know that Too Much, the Great Dane, is playing the bongos.
Okay, so alternate percussion by Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I mean, Velma definitely plays the theremin.
Daphne, I mean, let's make Daphne like a little, like, cause, you know, like she's not a great character. In the show, like originally,
she shreds. She probably plays guitar.
Yeah,
so man.
Yeah, she's on guitar.
She's on the guitar. We'll put Fred on like
tambourine.
Yeah, tambourine. Yeah, let's put Fred on tambourine.
Fred's on tambourine. Yeah. Daphne's on the guitar.
That's definitely good.
And then Shaggy's on bass.
Bass. Yeah. Is there any other character? Is that it?
No, that's it.
Scrappy plays synthesizer.
In Mysteries 5, there was an extra character.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I'm sending you on tangents left
so
and right.
So the network rejected Mysteries 5. I already said that. The musical factor was completely dropped. All the characters were renamed, and the show was renamed to Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
Awesome.
But they didn't give up. They didn't completely give up on this musical cartoon idea. So it was back to the drawing board. And this time they found a winner with
Josie and the Pussycats. What year are we talking here?
I will get there.
Cool.
But it's somewhere on this page and I
won't get ahead of you.
So to capitalize on the anticipated inevitable musical success of the cartoon series, a nationwide search began to audition vocal talent.
Sweet.
Yeah. So the voice actors were not only supposed to provide the speaking and singing voices of the characters, but were also to embody a physical representation of the band. Yeah, isn't that cool?
Sweet. So an actual Josie and the Pussycats that had to like go and tour.
Yes.
Sweet. Yes.
The idea was to have them do live action appearance at the end of every episode.
So this is like a reverse Gorillaz situation. Like they're animated, but they're actually also real people.
Yes, and they were gonna do a tour.
That's sick. Did this actually happen?
Well, we'll get there.
Okay, I'm getting ahead of you. I'm too excited.
That's okay. I think this is a really interesting story. So after auditioning 500 women, they settled upon Kathleen Doherty as Josie, Cheryl Ladd, who later replaced Farrah Fawcett on Charlie's Angels, as Melody. And Patrice Holloway, soul singer and sister to Motown artist Brenda Holloway, as Valerie.
Sick.
The songwriting team, including, among others, songwriter Danny Jansen, who had written music for Bobby Sherman and the Partridge Family, and Bobby Hart, songwriter for the Monkees, got to work writing songs based on the voices of these three women, especially focusing on the soulful vocal quality of Patrice Holloway. So when Jansen presented the band that they had created to Hanna and Barbera, it came as a tremendous shock when their response was to recast Patrice Holloway, a.k.a. Valerie.
What?
Yeah. They said that they wanted to make the whole band white, even though the character from the comics had always been black.
Well, they're fucking wrong.
Yeah. So Jansen refused and was adamant that Patrice Holloway remain in the band and threatened to walk away from the project in protest.
Nice.
And after a 3-week standoff, Hanna and Barbera relented, and Valerie, voiced by Patrice Holloway, went on to be the first long-running African-American character in a cartoon series.
Really?
Yeah.
The first one?
Yeah.
Huh.
That is what Josie and the Pussycats, the cartoon series, is known for.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
That's rad.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That's extra special rad.
So, Josie and the Pussycats debuted September 12th, 1970 in the CBS Saturday morning lineup with a 16-episode series. I watched one free episode on the Hanna-Barbera streaming service because they've got a couple free episodes without having to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very similar to Scooby-Doo. They also solve mysteries. They do a lot of running through recycled backgrounds. There's a laugh track, and it uses the exact same incidental music that they use in Scooby-Doo.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, as I was watching, I was like, I know this. And the character designs and color palettes are also very similar. Alan M. looks like Fred. Alex looks like Shaggy with the same voice actor doing the voice.
No.
Casey Kasem.
It's Casey Kasem?
It's Casey Kasem.
Wait, has Casey Kasem always been Shaggy?
Yes.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
What? That.
Yeah. I knew Casey Kasem from, you know, was it Sunday Countdown?
Radio?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sunday Radio Countdown with Casey Kasem.
With the big proximity voice.
An album based on the cartoon was released in December of 1970. And from what I can tell, it is pretty rare. I actually looked to see if I could find one.
Is it on YouTube or Spotify? Can you listen to it?
You know, I didn't do that. I was looking for an actual vinyl.
We'll have to do this research. How much does the vinyl cost?
$230.
Dang, that's a pretty rare vinyl.
Yeah.
That's dope. I wonder who has it. If anyone's got a lead on that Josie and the Pussycats vinyl, hit us up.
Yeah, please.
Because I kind of want it.
I kind of want it too. So sadly, none of the songs ended up charting, and the album had very poor sales, which was a huge disappointment. And because they didn't get that payoff, there had been a national tour that had been planned for Josie and the Pussycats, but it was completely canceled and the band was dissolved.
No.
Yeah. A 16-episode sequel series called Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space was released the next year, but they used the voices of studio musicians instead.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's very Xenon Girl of the 21st Century. Have, like, musicians in space. That's great.
Yeah. Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space.
That's awesome. The 70s were such a weird time, man.
Yeah. It's true.
I wasn't there, but it seems like it was a weird time.
Well, you know, it's like coming out of the 60s.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that's it. The characters were largely ignored after that until they were revitalized by the 2001 feature film.
Wow. I mean, I remember seeing reruns, I guess, of the Hanna-Barbera show like once or twice before then. So it was still around in the 90s, but yeah, I guess not a very big thing for maybe 20 years.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole bunch of new content.
Right. It was just reruns.
The characters didn't completely disappear. Like, there was still some like comic stuff, but just not very much.
Gotcha.
Okay, so this is the part I had mentioned before that I'd done some like interesting research.
Yeah. All right, bring it.
I don't know if we have time.
We'll see.
Or yeah, okay. So you'll make the determination whether or not it fits and if it deserves to stay.
I'm just gonna let you all know right now that this is Eric from the future coming in to tell you that Bailey and I ended up talking for 4.5 hours, and I cut most of it. But you can subscribe to us on Patreon and get the full 4.5 hour discussion.
So,
I'm so full of shit. I'm sorry, Bailey. You can continue.
I was just gonna let that be.
Sure. We'll cut that out if we need to.
No. That was great. Okay. La la la. Where are we?
Weird research.
Yes. So, Josie and the Pussycats, the one we're watching out there, is loosely inspired by the cartoon series. There is a mystery, although it's one that only is a mystery for the characters and not for the audience. So it's really not a spoiler to say, although here in the time machine, we can't really be liable if we say anything like whatever, like, you know, we don't know exactly what we're saying at any time here, like moving slightly faster. So, and also, like, at this point, you should have watched the movie if you're listening.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, if you're going to get upset about spoilers, I'm sorry.
Spoilers don't actually exist on alternate timelines. So,
yeah. Okay. So, but the movie, I think it's safe to say that a big theme in the movie is product placement and subliminal messaging and music.
Most definitely.
So, like I've said before, I often start with the trivia section of IMDb and kind of use it as a launching pad to further research on a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Even though the trivia page for Josie has 35 trivia pieces, most of them are not very interesting. One of the bits I thought worthy of note is that there are 73 different companies represented through product placement in this movie.
Are we going to try and name them all right now?
Right now.
Okay, awesome.
And this is the part that it'll be on Patreon.
Yeah.
none of those 73 different companies spent any money on that advertising.
What?
They got it for free. Because
wow.
Because that's just what the movie is about.
Wow. Dang.
Yeah, so they weren't actually sponsored. They didn't sponsor.
They just had to get clearance from all these companies? That's crazy.
Yeah. So I thought what I'd like to do is talk about the history of subliminal messaging and music.
Hell yeah. That sounds super great. Also, I just want to take this moment to say that this movie taught me that concept. I had never heard of the concept of subliminal messaging, and it was like a totally new concept to me at 10 or 11, however old I was when I saw this movie. And it was something that was so mind-blowing. Like, how could they brainwash me without me even knowing it? And now it's like, you know, everyone's their own brand and stuff on social media, and we're all like steeped in this concept of like how to message without messaging, or message, you know, with in a subtle way with your framing and your products and your cool life and stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool that you remember that, like learning that concept from this movie.
Oh, most definitely. It was like I had never known what that was, and I had to like ask my mom like, what is this? But also like I think I got context clues from the movie, and like Crow and I talked about it, and we're like, oh, I get it.
Okay. So-called subliminal messaging in music is a recording technique called backmasking. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay. So it's a process in which recorded sound is played and re-recorded backward into a song.
Okay. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
That's called backmasking.
Backmasking.
Okay.
So the first known hit number to have an example of backmasking is a song called Car Trouble by The Eligibles.
Okay.
And I listened to it. It's a pretty silly song. It's about a young guy trying to take a date out in his car, and her dad keeps running out and yelling something unintelligible at them. And it happens twice. And if you were to play the song backwards, it first says, "And you can get my daughter back at 10:30, you bum." And then the second, "Now look at here, cat. Stop running these records backwards." It's pretty silly.
Wow.
Which it's interesting, like to note that is so silly. And then what comes later out of it is so not silly, and yet very silly still. But that's not really what we think of. So now that you know what that is, can you think of the mega band that brought this into the pop culture?
Well, yeah, there's like a really famous one with the Beatles, where it says Paul is a dead man, miss him, miss him, miss him, in a track off Abbey Road.
Yep.
And so that was a really big one. Also Led Zeppelin with Stairway to Heaven, I think, has like some backward stuff that's pretty intense. Like Satanist shit or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty fun. There's like a lot of examples of this throughout music history.
So like I'm really excited to have the opportunity to just talk about the Beatles for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Because I loved the Beatles in high school.
Did you?
Oh yeah.
Nice.
My whole room had a whole wall dedicated to Beatles stuff.
Wow. Are you gonna go see Yesterday?
Probably.
Yeah.
So the Beatles, a couple songs that, feature, backmasking. You mentioned one of them, although you didn't say the name. There's Tomorrow Never Knows, I'm Only Sleeping, Rain, and of course, Revolution Number 9.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you were talking about, Paul is Dead, Man, Miss Him, Miss Him, Miss Him. That's the one you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's from I'm So Tired.
Gotcha.
But the thing is, like, it's most of their like true backmasking that they did is with instrumentation and like playing the guitar backward and stuff like that. The instrumentation obviously being recorded backwards, coupled with the ability to play a record backward.
Mm-hmm. Tape as well. You know, if not a record in the studio, I guess it would have been magnetic tape.
Right. But I don't think there were a lot of tapes in the 60s. I think that came later, right?
I don't know. I think it was probably, they were probably recording direct to like 2-inch or 1/4-inch magnetic tape at that time.
But like commercialized tapes for people
not
to
like
buy?
Not like cassette tapes. Yeah. No, like 8-tracks didn't come out until I guess like the 70s or something
like
that.
I'm talking about consumers.
Right. Okay.
Having the ability to play the music backward.
Oh, like on, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And just like running it over the needle backward.
Right. Totally.
So like, you know, people, curious people will be curious. Mm-hmm. And so they played it backward, probably just to hear the melodies lines played forward, because that's a pretty fascinating concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people are creative and suspicious and superstitious, and they love conspiracies.
They sure do.
And
flat earthers, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, there's some really interesting ones out there.
Oh, let's not get into that conversation right now. Last too long.
So they started to believe that they were hearing secret messages in the lyrics when they played them backwards. And you mentioned one of them, and that was kind of what led to the infamous Paul is Dead conspiracy.
Right.
And that was one of the big ones. And then the other one is Turn Me On, Dead Man. And Revolution Number 9, which that one itself is kind of like, it's an experimental song,
mm-hmm.
Which is already kind of unnerving if you're not expecting something like that on a pop album.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to fall too hard into this internet hole, but I did listen to both of those songs and like listened to the backmasking,
mm-hmm.
Played forward. And honestly, it's like EVPs. You know what those are?
Mm-mm.
Electronic voice phenomena. It's a popular thing for ghost hunters to do.
Oh, yes. I've heard of that. Like listening through white noise to hear voices and
yes.
stuff. Yes.
And it's the same kind of thing. It's like when people are looking for something, they'll hear whatever they want to hear.
Right.
It's
a reach.
Yes. And so the rumor that Paul was dead was cleared up when Paul McCartney was located at a family home in the country. The truth is he had simply secluded himself after John Lennon left the band. But the idea of hidden messages in rock music had captured the imaginations of many people in the United States, especially the very religious. You mentioned something about satanic messages in Led Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where this comes from. It's from this movement. This religious movement.
Sure.
And
well, that's like, interesting that it's not only like, you know, religions going against, like, you know, because I guess in my time it would have been Harry Potter. You know, you have the religious fundamentalist class in America being like, witchcraft is evil, and like this phenomena that's sweeping the country must be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just seemingly been happening in every decade with something, whether it's Harry Potter or rock and roll music or video games or whatever.
Right, right. And obviously it's not everyone in the Christian faith. Like it's just
no, of course.
It's just like been some extreme.
Yeah, some fundamentalists.
Yeah. And so like there is a historical association. So, okay, let's start over. Now, there is a historical association between playing music backward and the occult.
Sure.
So none other than Aleister Crowley is in one of his books, To Train Magicians, advises his followers to listen to phonographs backward to retrain their minds to better access magic.
Whoa, cool.
There is also a history of people responding emotionally to certain musical motifs. And I have a couple examples. The Devil's Tritone was used to represent the devil himself in many classical pieces. And, you know, I thought about asking Cullen to, like, make one for us so he can insert it.
Nice.
And then later on, Stravinsky's atonal masterpiece, The Rite of Spring, caused a violent riot in the theater where it was debuted. Have you heard of that before?
No, I have not.
People, like, they set fire to the theater and tore up seats and stuff.
Wow.
Because they were so upset by the music.
That's crazy.
And thirdly, rock and roll music also has a history of upsetting Christian Protestant denominations, and no band more so than the quote bigger than Jesus Beatles.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've heard that quote before, right?
No.
John Lennon said that they were bigger than Jesus.
Well, might have reached more people. I don't know.
Well,
at the time,
a lot of people were really upset with that.
I'm sure they were. Such sacrilege. Very 60s.
So with what was happening with the youth at the time, mm-hmm. and the drug-infused counterculture.
Moral panic.
Yeah, in the 60s, like moral panic, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't take a huge leap that some people, you know, especially with the love of conspiracies, were easily convinced that there were demonic messages in rock music.
Sure.
Yeah, why else would their children be behaving this way?
I couldn't tell you. They're just acting crazy and going to places like San Francisco.
And doing drugs.
And doing drugs. Listening to this rock and roll music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, fundamental.
Yum.
I think this time machine is starting to get to me. We might need to wrap it up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So fundamentalist Christian groups began to claim that backmasking would reach the unconscious mind and subtly influence the listener's behaviors and thoughts without their knowledge.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm. Other bands accused of inserting nefarious secret messages through backmasking were Pink Floyd, Electric Light Orchestra, Queen, Styx, Led Zeppelin, The Eagles, Rush, The Rolling Stones, and Britney Spears.
Hell yeah.
It was taken so seriously that it led to several organized record smashings and even to two states attempting to pass legislation to ban or regulate backmasking.
What?
Yeah. So I wrote down a quote from one of the bills.
The shit that that legislatures will waste time on. Dear Lord.
Yeah. It says backmasking. Quote, this is the quote. Sorry. Quote, backmasking can manipulate our behavior without our knowledge or consent and turn us into disciples of the Antichrist.
Can I get the source that they cited for this bill? Like, I would really love to read, you know, who they were calling to testify in honor of this bill.
I'll have to get that for you.
I bet that would just be a hoot.
Yeah. So this was something that was widely believed well into the 90s. I mean, you know, I said Britney Spears.
Yeah.
Despite the lack of any scientific proof.
Sure.
But then with the popularity of CDs and how it was much more difficult to play the music backwards on CDs,
right?
The fears just kind of went away. And all in all, there is no scientific proof that our brains can interpret backward messages, nor that we are subconsciously influenced by them. So,
but I'm so sick of these Puma sweats. I need to get some Adidas sweats.
Adidas are the new Puma sweats. And that's the brief history of subliminal messaging and music.
Wonderful.
And that's it.
Oh, is it time? I guess people are showing up now.
Oh, they've already showed up.
I guess it's time to rejoin the party.
Yeah.
The movie's ending. That's right. Not people showing up.
Yeah, that's okay. Like your timelines are kind of confused and fuzzy right now.
You know, I thought I'd be a master at this by now, but you know, it's weird every time.
Well, this is the first time you've had to talk during this.
That's true. Usually I'm just the one silently laughing in the corner. And trying to choke back my laughter when you guys go off.
Well, now you get to be the one causing the laughter.
I guess maybe.
Yeah. All right, let's go.
Okay, cool.
All passengers must return to their respective times. Goodbye.
Boom 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 ba-dum doom 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 bum bop bum ba-da bum ba da 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 da
bum
do 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 broom do do ba ba da ba ba do 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 ba da ba do 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 do
Hell yeah. So we just finished watching Josie and the Pussycats. Featuring the illustrious Mario.
We wish.
Yeah, right? Wouldn't it be cool if... No, there was Sega, but no Nintendo.
Else, but, you know, yeah, Sega, no Nintendo. Oh, all right. My questions. Well, yes, like Eric said, here we are. Thank you all for staying. We want to start off. Is there anybody that's seen this movie before? First time for everyone.
Everyone's first time. Oh, Jesus.
Wow.
Has this ever
happened? Have you seen this?
No, but I came in like past. I came in halfway, past the halfway mark for this movie, so I actually still haven't seen this movie.
So you still haven't seen the whole movie?
Wow. Wow.
If we're being technical, yes.
So, like, you know, this is all about music, and I this was a movie that you watched when you were little. So,
yes.
I wanted to ask everybody, do you have memories or stories about what your first CD was? I know mine was the B-52s, I mean, that was the name of the album.
Mine was Avril Lavigne, Let Go.
Mine was The Darkness, Permission to Land.
I can't remember the first album I bought, but I remember like being a little kid and singing a lot of Patsy Cline songs with my mom, like all the ones Willie Nelson wrote, like Lonely and all that stuff. Like I remember like my mom would just, of course she's my mom, she'd just like sit there and watch this like 5-year-old sing Lonely by Patsy Cline. Like, that's what I remember. Like, I'd say that. I guess that was my first album.
I can't remember any of the specific songs off the album. I really just remember the CD because it was really cool. It was the soundtrack to Space Jam. Actually, no. I do remember one of the songs off of it. I'm pretty sure Bow Wow, when he was, like, actually a young kid and he was still Bow Wow, he was one of the songs. Little Bow Wow. Yeah. I do remember that one.
I don't really remember when I started to own my own CDs, but I have really early memories of road trips with Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare, the Pinkerton album by Weezer, and Supertramp's Breakfast in America.
Two of those were our mom, and one of those was me.
Yeah, I know.
My first album was Dookie by Green Day. I was like 7 years old and I made my mom buy it for me. And then I immediately bought Ride the Lightning by Metallica. And then whatever the Spice Girls album was. And then whatever the Jewel album was at the same time. So it's a weird fucking start for me.
Everyone's got like hipster first CDs. My first CD that was actually mine was in elementary school by my friend's dad who played at assemblies that had he did a whole bunch of fun songs for kids about like it was about there was my favorite one. I would take all the couch cushions off of our really old couch and put them on the floor and jump around to his song about being in the pouch of a kangaroo. That was the best time I had with my first CD.
So this isn't my first CD, but I feel like it's pretty on topic. The first concert that I ever went to was actually NSYNC. And it
That's
was
great.
It was honestly a really good
so
show.
Jealous.
I still remember to this day. I can't even remember how young I was, but I still remember like their last thing before they left. It was like a magic show. Like they all got into these boxes and they were backlit so you could see their like outlines, and then the boxes exploded and they were gone. And that's how they left the stage. It was so cool.
Oh my gosh.
So I know I already went, but I think I remembered my actual first CD.
Great.
I'm not certain. It's a bit fuzzy. I don't know if this was first, but this was just like a blast of nostalgia. When I was in elementary school, there was this after-school program called, what was it? Doesn't matter. Anyway.
After-school program A.
Brain something with brains. Odyssey of the Mind. Yes.
I remember that.
I was in an after-school program called Odyssey of the Mind, and there was a project that me and some kids did together with, you know, adult direction and supervision, where we took a film of us dancing, and we would dance behind this this screen with a light projecting behind it, so you could see like our silhouettes behind the screen. And everyone who worked on the project got a CD that had the single track that we danced to, and it said Shadowland Dance, and it was just like a burned CD, like someone burned it for me with this one track, Shadowland Dance, and it was some like electronic music post 90s bullshit, you know. It wasn't great,
that
but I remember
rules.
It
that rules so hard. I actually just recently saw somebody that I follow on Twitter post like this thread about Odyssey of the Mind, like, hey, did anybody I know do this weird thing that I did when I was little? And it's called Odyssey of the Mind. And like tons, just like it just went like immediately viral, and like all these people started like responding like, yo, I built dope robots in Odyssey of the Mind and it was great. And somebody shared some story about like basically like hacking the prompt, where it's like you need to try and get like this, I guess their prompt was like you need to get this object from like one side of a basketball court to the other, and their machine was just basically like a potato gun that they just like fired it to the other side, and they like one-handed like immediately, but I guess they got disqualified because the judges wanted a robot or something. I don't remember how it went, but it was pretty awesome. Nice hack story.
Potato guns are a good hack.
Yeah.
So, you know, this movie was a lot about commercialism and advertising and product placement. So, like, you know, at that time period, there was a lot of, you know, branding on T-shirts and shorts and pants and stuff. And I was wondering, like, do y'all have any memories of wearing stuff like that or advertising influencing what you wanted when you were little?
Yes, I definitely remember my older sister having Aeropostale shirts and Abercrombie and Fitch shirts and stealing them and wearing them because I thought they were so cool and I wanted people to know that I shopped there when I didn't. I just shopped in her closet.
So, I don't know if I was ever like super brand loyal to anything, but I do remember very vividly. I had this like, I had two Old Navy shirts that just Old Navy right across the front there. And they were the two most comfortable shirts I've ever owned. They're so soft. And I still think about that every once in a while. I'm like, could I find that old Red Navy shirt? Like that old Navy shirt?
This podcast brought to you by Old Navy.
Sponsor us, please.
Watching that movie really reminded me of how much I loved high heels, but in reality, like, I hate high heels because they're just garbage, and I think that was what society was telling me that I needed to be, and I remember just being like, oh, Steve Maddens, I love them so much, and I had so many Steve Maddens, but, like, I fucking hated wearing them, so I don't know. That was just, like, really
Rebel.
Weird because I never knew that was a thing.
Do you guys remember the Steve Madden ads that were just, they looked like Bratz dolls?
Yes.
Yeah, that shit's burned into my mind. I still, like, fucking Barton Creek Mall or Barton Square Mall, like, whatever it is, like, just in my mind is, like, this bleach blonde girl with a cubed head and giant eyes wearing these fucking Maddens. And it's to this day, I still think about that.
So it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Made me fucking hate those shoes, too.
They're terrible shoes. They're terrible shoes.
So, I'm sorry. You go ahead. I need a moment to collect my thoughts.
You were way in front of me.
I know, but I lost.
Oh, okay. No, my whole thing was I didn't realize what you were talking about, the branded like T-shirt thing or whatever, until you brought up the Aeropostale or whatever, and then I was like, what the fuck was I wearing? And then I was like, oh yeah, I wasn't like. You know, I thought I was, like, so not conformist, but I had this giant Shorties branded hoodie or, like, toy machine.
Yeah.
you know? And it's like literally the fucking exact same thing, except I was like into skateboard culture or whatever. So I thought I was like, no, I'm not doing the same thing. Like, I'm definitely not wearing just like a giant brand on the hoodie that I'm wearing every day. But it's 100% exactly the same. So. Yes.
When I was in high school, I had a beanie with Gurr from Invader Zim as the design. Hot topic. It was a hot topic back then. Still is. Does that count as product placement? Yeah, if it, yeah. 100%. I prefer like character designs and symbol stuff over just like brand names or letters. You know, I've never understood those Michael Kors bags. They seem super tacky to me.
That's because you were cool. So I was a little bit older when this movie came out, and I was in high school, and so like the advertising on the clothing was something, you know, that I was like a little bit more, I was older and a little bit more complicit, I guess. And I don't remember having anything that said Abercrombie and Fitch and stuff like that, but I do remember going into a Gadzooks. I think it was a Gadzooks, and there was like a baseball tee kind of thing that said Hottie across the front, and I went in there with a friend, and both of us were like, we were feeling really self-positive, and we were like, yeah, let's get these Hottie shirts because we're hotties, right? Even though like nobody, like we were each other's best friends. Like we had no other friends. We're like, but we're hotties. And like, and we both bought one, and I don't know if she ever wore hers. I think I wore mine once. And I felt so awkward wearing it. Like, I could not own it at all. It was one of those things, like, I remember those things that, like, it said things like that. And, like, it was not something that I felt comfortable wearing at all. But I bought one. I did.
I actually forgot why I asked for the microphone. But I do remember this. Like, I had two pairs of, like, Rocawear jeans. You guys remember those? And they were like four sizes too big because I thought that's how you had to wear pants back in the day. And my mom hated it. I remember that pretty well. She'd just be like, take off, put on shorts. Like, what are you doing? But so Rocawear, I bought into that pretty hard too.
Hold on.
I remember skateboarding in JNCOs and like Sutters or whatever, which is like completely impractical for skateboarding. So like you'd have to rubber band your legs so you didn't roll over your jeans when you were skateboarding. It's totally like the same era of garbage.
It always reminded me of like people pretending they were like mummies or like weird like BDSM stuff when I saw those jeans.
I will say that is probably like one of the two I was going to mention as like the brands that I really rocked was JNCO, because I like really, really wanted to be a goth kid in middle school, but like JNCO was like halfway there and like my parents wouldn't let me shop at Hot Topic. And then finally they did. And then I got to rep Trip, which was like with two P's, which was like, you know, height, like peak mall goth. And I was so there for that. And the big thing that I remember with the mall goth pants was that my parents in our living room had these leather sofas and they wouldn't let me sit on them because I had all these zippers and things on my pants and they were afraid that I would tear a hole in the leather furniture. And so for probably the first 2 years of high school, I just sat on the floor in my living room every single time I wanted to go there. Like our bar seats were also leather. So like I had to sit at like the kitchen table while everyone else was eating dinner up at the bar top or eating breakfast up at the bar top or whatever. Like it was so lame.
I know. I just walked in on the hottie conversation about like, and I thought that was interesting because when we were taking pictures of like we're taking pictures of our family and sending them out to our relatives during the fucking summer months. And we had these hottie shirts.
You had a hottie shirt too.
We had white shirts with hottie and hot pink.
Ours was blue with white print.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. We had like the opposite weirdness going on. We were like white shirts, like very hot pink, hot, hottie. And it was all of my sisters. I have three sisters and my mother. And we were taking those photos and we were like taking them to get them sent to all of our relatives for our Christmas photos. They're just like,
all hotties.
What is going on? Because like later in life, when I started picking my own fashion, I very went to trip. And I was wearing like baggy jeans and like chains between them and all that stuff. And my mom was just like, what the hell is wrong with you?
The coldest time of year. We are all hotties. That's so great. Do any of y'all remember any commercial jingles from when you were little?
I definitely have one immediately, which is from the 90s, Christmas time. This must have been the mid 90s, I would guess circa 1995. And it was the Christmas song for the Sears commercials that went something like, come feel the softer side of Sears. And it was beautiful. I remember watching like Jurassic Park or some other such like gnarly movie and like then just immediately cutting to a commercial break where they're advertising like some new fragrance and it's like, come feel the softer side of Sears. Mattress Firm, where it's easy to get a great night's sleep,
has been burned into my head for two decades.
So wait, keep the microphone, Cullen. I have my own. Honestly, when I was a kid, I thought it was really important to learn jingles. So like I've got way too many stored in my brain and I'm not going to bore everybody with all of those. But I do want to point out Cullen, who does, works with me on all the music for the show. Yes. The very first song you ever sang when you were a baby was a jingle and it was for Outback Steakhouse for Father's Day. It was an advertisement for Father's Day, like, I don't know, half off at Outback Steakhouse. And it was like, these Australian guys singing, dear old dad, this is what we do for all he's done for you. And here was Cullen in the back seat and his like, little baby seat going, da, oh, da, da, oh, da.
That's a lot. Wow.
Did you ever know that?
No, I didn't know that. Called 1-800-STEAMER. Stanley Steamer gets your home cleaner. 800-588-2300-EMPIRE.
Hold on. That is a way different Stanley Steamer jingle than I remember because clearly the Stanley Steamer jingle that I remember is Stanley Steamer, tough on dirt, gentle on carpet. That's right.
Wanna Fanta, don't you wanna Fanta? Okay, I'm sorry, but this honestly pisses me off that people argue that it's pronounced Fanta when they have an advertising campaign where they clearly Fanta. Sing Fanta. Yeah, there's
one that's out. We better get a sponsor after all this.
This reminds me of So I think that maybe the reason that there's so many really memorable jingles for really like boring subjects is because fun products sell themselves on fun. But the way you stand out from the competition when you are a carpet cleaner is by people memorizing your phone number by singing it to them,
Yes.
Like Chuck E. Cheese doesn't need like
like a jingle for Chuck E. Cheese. It's Chuck E. fucking Cheese.
That's right. That's right.
You know, the kids are going to come for trash pizza and animatronic nightmare machines.
They sure are.
And tubes, also tubes. Why don't they have adult-sized tubes?
That's a good question.
All right, so we're going to wrap this up. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Oh, wait, Kate has something to say.
I was waiting for a place to bring it up, and I didn't get the chance. But I want to talk about Totally Spies. Does anybody know Totally Spies?
No.
Totally, I remember Totally Spies.
Yes, Totally Spies is a cartoon that I own on VHS. And the very first episode...
Totally Spies.
The very first episode, which I forced Cullen to watch... is about three girls who are pop sensations and also secretly spies. One of them is a leader and the other two are like backup singers. And in the first episode, they have to fight a corporate entity that is using music to brainwash people into following him. So, and we looked it up at the end of the movie, and that episode, the first episode of the series, came out 5 months after Josie Pussycats.
Whoa! Whoa! That's super cool. Thank you for that. That's awesome.
And Josie and the Pussycats, as a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, started out as a mystery-solving cartoon.
It's true.
Like Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
It's true. So, now that we're wrapping it up. For real?
Yep.
How did it feel watching this movie? How long had it been since you'd watched this movie before?
It's been a while. It's been at least 10 or 15 years since I've seen this movie. And yeah, it's really great to watch it with friends. Just a real hoot all the way around. The product placement was absolutely incredible. Like just every shot. Just every shot has something. You know, Tara Reid petting the target dog or just, you know, something of that nature going on in pretty much every shot. Well,
the whales swimming in the
Evian water. Yeah, right. The whales in the Evian water, very good.
So I didn't mention this before when we were talking before, but, you know, like the movie didn't do well when it initially came out.
Shocking. I'm really shocked.
But the album was a gold album. And since then, the movie has gained a cult following. So, like, you know, you've watched it again. Does it hold up for you?
You know, in some ways, it definitely holds up. Like, Du Jour is such a good hack of the Backstreet Boys. Like, it's really, really on point. You know, Josie and the Pussycats as a band is really fun. Personally, I'm like... I find the like lead singer going and ditching their best friends to like make it in the big leagues to be kind of a like a pet peeve of a story trope. Like I really had that problem with Bohemian Rhapsody this year or last year, I guess it would have been, where it was like, oh man, I'm so sick of this trope of just like a band gets together and starts to make it big, and then the record label wants the lead singer to be the only one in the band. That's lame. But other than that, yeah, it does. A lot of it does hold up in some ways. Still very. I think the biggest way it holds up is as a time capsule. Like just seeing
Absolutely.
All of the branding from that time period and kind of like what was going on around that time period and people buying stuff was really something.
Cullen is freaking out.
Sega.
Oh, well,
yes,
that,
of course,
that's relevant
definitely.
To
Sega,
the movie.
Sega, very, very heavily profiled in this movie, which I really enjoyed because it wasn't long after this that they went under as
a
company.
Yeah, I mean, like...
And they got bought out by Nintendo.
Yeah, it's very interesting as a time capsule, as you say, because there was Sega, there was some, like, weird Gatorade energy bar.
Yeah, Zima was still a beverage, an alcoholic.
Yeah,
yeah, Zima's back as
the
an
music,
alcoholic beverage.
The clothing, the casting, like Mr. Movie Phone.
Oh yeah, Mr. Movie Phone.
The Bill Cosby and Heath Ledger jokes.
Yeah.
The Bill Cosby and Heath Ledger jokes.
I mean, Heath Ledger is the new Matt Damon. If you hadn't heard, it's true. bummer. Real bummer, guys.
Yeah, like I think it's interesting. R.I.P. It's definitely interesting to watch, like from that perspective, just like to see what it was like in 2001. Like, even though it is like, you know, a hyper representation of it, it is interesting.
Most definitely.
And the music is great.
Yeah, I really love all the songs. I mean, Three Small Words and Spin Around are both so catchy. I still love them. Like, I still love them so much. I mean, I like pretty much all of their songs.
Yeah, it'll be in my head for weeks for sure.
I'm sure it will be.
Are there any final notes that you have?
I think that's pretty much it. For anyone out there who is a fan of the new Riverdale or Sabrina the Teenage Witch shows, since we didn't really have too many people here commenting on the difference, I think that's something I'm definitely still interested in. And if you want to write into the show and just talk with us a little bit about Josie and the Pussycats, Pussycats then and now, and even if you were somebody who grew up with the Hanna-Barbera show or the comics, like, please write into us at memorystatic@gmail.com and we can talk further about it, and, you know, maybe post something about those discussions or something. It would just expand the universe a little bit, so that would be fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing this movie with everyone.
And thanks, everyone, for coming. You guys are rad. Thanks for doing this with us.
Yeah. And until next time, return your videos here.
Behold!
Are you sure this is gonna do the trick?
Oh, undoubtedly so. This new Soundgooder device, which I created with my science brain, will guarantee that you finally get inside their head. Go ahead and do the honors.
Let's turn it all the way up.
Memory Static is hosted by Bailey Moore and produced and edited by me, Eric Dumick. I'd like to extend a really, really special thank you to me for being the guest. We really loved having you. It was fantastic. You sound so nice on mic. Special thanks to Chewy for hosting the party. And thank you, Bailey, for those cat ears. I still wear them every day. Original music for this episode is by Bailey and Cullen Moore. If you like the show, please subscribe to us on any podcast platform. They're all good. If you happen to be listening on Apple Music, why don't you try rating and reviewing us if you like the show, as that will help us get out to more listeners. Post about us on Instagram. Send us some mail on Gmail. Do whatever you like to get in touch with us, because we like listener mail. This is a goofy episode. and an especially long outro. But, you know, whatever. Sometimes you gotta have a long outro. Be indulgent. Do what you love. Follow your dreams. Pursue your passions. Have a good time, you know, in your room by yourself when you're just editing a podcast. Thank you, everyone. Really the most special thanks goes out to our listeners for listening to the show and also putting up with this extremely long outro. What else? Is there anything else? I don't think so. I think that's all. Y'all rule.